Hello, and welcome to Color Me Healthy, a production of the Community Health Center of Buffalo. Color Me Healthy focuses on wellness for communities of color and how we can all develop a better quality of life. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by Community Health Center employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of the Community Health Center or any of its officials. This program is meant to be used for general informational purposes only. While this program provides information on such topics as health and wellness, the subject matter discussed is not intended to be a substitute for seeking care and service from a health professional. In all instances, even where a guest is a licensed physician, listeners should not view the opinions and perspectives expressed on the program as medical advice. Listeners are also encouraged to pay attention to the credentials and professional qualifications of the program's guests. In instances where a guest is not a licensed medical professional, listeners should note that the guest is not legally authorized to practice medicine in any setting. Listeners are always encouraged to consult with their own personal health care professional.
Well, today on Color Me Healthy, we're going to flip the script a little bit, and we have in our studio Carla Thomas, Director of Outreach and Marketing here at the Community Health Center of Buffalo, and she's going to interview me. How about that, huh? That's a novel idea. What do you think about that, Carla?
Good morning, and I think that is a wonderful idea. It's very important for people to know exactly who you are, not just that you're the host of Color Me Healthy, but the service that you provide and what you actually mean to the Community Health Center.
Well, that's very nice of you to say. So I know you have some questions and you want to maybe talk about a few topics. And I know today we're going to focus on mental health, right? That's going to be
absolutely
pretty much it. So let's go. Let's do it.
All righty then. Let's get this party started. Let me ask the number one key question that people are probably wondering. Just tell me, who exactly is Carl Shallowhorn?
Well, that's a good question. I sometimes wonder myself. But basically, so my story is centered around mental health, recovery from addiction. I've been living with bipolar disorder since I was 18. I had my first episode when I was a freshman in college. And that experience basically changed my life. I came back to Buffalo at that time and basically spent the next 7 or 8 years, you know, bouncing in and out of hospitals here locally, you know, Buffalo General, back when they had A.D. Goodrich in the Community Mental Health, Center. There was also ECMC, Erie County Medical Center, and then also finally Buffalo Psychiatric Center, where I was actually at a couple times. And those were some pretty scary times. You know, I my life was, like this old saying goes, my life was in the balance. And as I said, I was also abusing drugs around that time. So I really didn't have a firm grasp on my mental health. Eventually, though, I was in a session with my therapist, my counselor, and he knew my pattern. He knew kind of what I was, up to, and what my revolving, door cycle was with hospitals. And he basically said, either I go to rehab, I go to a 12-step meeting, or I end up back in the hospital. And I it didn't take me long to figure that one out, what I would do,
right?
Because I knew that I didn't want to go to rehab. I was actually working at the time. I'd managed to graduate from college somehow through all that insanity. I mean, literally insanity. I don't use that word lightly. I managed to graduate from college, and I had a job at a local recording studio, Select Sound Recording Studio. And I didn't want to tell my boss I had drug problems, so I said to Dick, his name is Dick Heffron, I said, well, I guess I'll go to the 12-step meeting. And because I knew the hospital was not the way to go. Mm-hmm. And then I went to that meeting a couple of days later, and it literally changed my life. It was the day I walked into that large gymnasium with the other people there. And I had hope, a feeling of hope for the first time that maybe things could be different. Maybe I didn't have to live that way anymore. And that's where it all began. So my recovery began. My clean date is January 17th, 1988. And I've been blessed to have been clean since then. And, You know, it's been a whole experience of learning. So the last 30 years, 31 years or so, have been about learning about mental health, learning about myself, learning about how to take care of myself. But it also helped to launch my career in addictions and mental health, where I got a job working at Buffalo General Hospital in 1992 and embarked on a six-year career with them. I eventually went back to school, got a master's degree in student personnel administration from SUNY Buffalo State, and entered the higher education arena for 12 years, where I worked doing a lot of admissions-related positions. I worked at Buffalo State, Genesee Community College, you know, Damon College. But I got this desire to go back into the world of mental health, just if anything, just to tell my story, because I'd been doing pretty well. I hadn't had any hospitalizations. I'd been pretty stable. So I just really, you know, in essence, wanted to tell people that recovery is possible. So one of the first things I did was I went to my pastor and I said to him, I said, you know, I really just want to share my story. I really just wanted to let people know that, you know, it's okay that people do get better. And he let me do that. I stood up in front of my church for the first time in front of a group of people, and I shared that story. And from there, I went on and eventually linked with the National Alliance on Mental Illness, their local Buffalo chapter. And that just kind of snowballed from there. I just found out more people. I did a lot of networking. I did work with the Western New York Children's Psychiatric Center. And then through all that effort, I eventually found myself working for a local provider, Horizon Health Services. And I worked as a counselor for their program for 3.5 years in one of their clinics. And then I ended up at the Mental Health Association, Erie County in Concord, Buffalo, where I worked for 4 years as director of community advocacy. So it's been, even though at the time I didn't know where all this was headed, when I look back, there's more of a straight line. You know, it's easy to look back and make the connected dots than looking forward, obviously. So I look back on that experience and I realize that it was all for a reason. You know, it all kind of brought me to where I'm at today, working here at the Community Health Center as an education program coordinator, where I really get a chance to take the skills I've learned over time and help people, educate people. You know, we have our program called Mental Health First Aid that we deliver, that we got a grant for. And it's about education. It's about awareness. It's about, you know, eliminating the stigma that's associated with mental illness. And so I've done a lot of writing. I'm a blogger. I write for BP Magazine. I write for my denomination, the United Church of Christ. We have a blog called The Journey. So a lot of my outlet is around writing and sharing my experience. And it's just been great. I love it. It's like what my life is about now. So it's been very fulfilling.
Well, for those of you who are listening, if you didn't know Carl Schallhorn before, I'll bet you know him now. Well, you know, given that history, you know, I really want to say I have to put you on my hero list, because two things. Number one, bad mental health is not a choice. It's not always a choice. It's not always connected to drug addiction.
Right.
But good mental health is a choice. You can choose to take your medicine. You can choose to participate in programs. You can choose to seek other outlets. And those are the things that help you choose in being successful in recovery, maintenance and sustenance. Mm-hmm. And I have to really congratulate you on that, because you have done a marvelous job, not only of recovery, but in reaching out and utilizing your experience to help others. And everybody can't, doesn't, won't do that. Right. So you're really commended for that, as well as for being a jewel in our community.
Oh, thank you so much, Carla.
So, you know, given your experiences, especially here at Community Health Center, you know, how does Carl Schallhorn define mental health and stigma?
Well, I would say mental health, first of all, it's a state of being. And mental health centers around a person's ability to feel, think, which affects one's behavior, action. And I'd say mental health is something that is valuable. It is important as physical health. You know, one thing that has happened over time is that people have not connected the two. And it's obvious, and we know that they go hand in hand. You know, research shows that, you know, when a person is not doing well physically, they suffer mentally and emotionally, and vice versa. You know, we know that people with severe mental illness die an average of 25 years earlier than the general population.
That's an amazing statistic.
Yes.
And you know, people so often don't make the connection between our mental health and our physical health. Our physical health and our mental health.
Right.
They just don't. They think that they're two separate things without realizing that the functionality of both are interdependent.
Right.
It's very important that people begin to realize that and act accordingly. How do you see CHCB, Community Health Center of Buffalo, being able to address the challenges that individuals who are enduring, I never say suffering, but
right,
enduring mental health issues. How do you see us being able to help address those issues?
On a number of levels.
Mm-hmm.
So for, you know, for those who are listening here who may not be familiar with what we do, we're a federally qualified health center. So we provide a vast array of services. We provide primary care, dental care, pediatrics, men's services, women's services. We have a pharmacy at our Buffalo location. We also have behavioral health services. And our behavioral health services are available to those who are in need of support, therapy, assistance, case management, which basically means helping them to manage some of those other life areas to help them be sustained. And what it does is it actually provides almost like a safety net for people to come to. And the nice thing about the Community Health Center is that, you know, we actually do have what's called integrated care, which has become a big focus over the last, I'd say, 10 years or so, the movement towards integrated care, where you have a behavioral health provider, whether it be a social worker or a counselor, embedded in a primary care setting. So there could be a warm handoff. If that person is being seen by a general practitioner and it's determined that they have any kind of mental health issue. Because, you know, nowadays you go to the doctor and they ask you about your mood. You might do a questionnaire, you know, that asks how you're doing emotionally. So if it's determined that you have a problem, they can then, like I said, do that warm handoff to that professional who's right there in, you know, in that that venue. So we're able to do that here. We have staff that are able to help in that way so that our folks can really get that help immediately. So, because what happens is part of the problem is that when a person gets an appointment, you know, or determines that there's an issue, the doctor might say, well, go to this clinic on such a date. A lot of people don't follow through.
They don't.
They don't follow through.
For any
number of reasons. It could be no fault of their own. Transportation, you know, insurance. You know, so we're a federally qualified health center. We actually have patients who don't have insurance. We have a sliding fee scale. And so we turn away no one, which is you know, a beautiful thing in itself. So that way, no one should go without being served.
Well, you know, that's the beauty of us being a one-stop.
Right.
If you're a regular dental patient and one of our dentists notice a significant change in your oral health, they may ask, you know, are you doing okay? Are you depressed about anything? And depending upon what your relationship is like with our dentist, that dentist could then recommend or hand your situation off to one of our behavior health counselors.
Right.
Just any number of different ways our organization and all of the various departments work together hand in hand to provide all around care for our patients. The stigma that is attached to mental health issues is one of the main reasons why people don't follow up. And by being a patient here in whatever regard that it is, patients are ensured that someone is going to be following up on them and they're not going to be able to drop off the face of the earth,
right,
not be followed we really try to, once we bring you into the Community Health Center family, to pass your good health off from one practitioner to another, so that by the time we're done, you've got good mental health, good physical health, good oral health, and access to resources mm-hmm. that can help you maintain and sustain a productive life.
You know, I'd like to actually touch on that stigma topic that you mentioned there, Carla, because mm-hmm. stigma is a major barrier for people seeking help. You know, so many times in our society, mental illness is seen as a weakness.
Yes.
And you said earlier, it's not a choice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's not like someone is weak because they have depression or they live with anxiety or any other type of mental health disorder. It means that there's something going on with their brain for whatever reason. I mean, we know that mental illness can come from a variety of factors. It could be genetic. It could be environmental. It could be trauma. You know, a lot of reasons. But the bottom line is the brain is what's affected. Mm-hmm. And so let's treat mental illness like we treat cancer or diabetes and
That's
things
fine.
Like that. And we also know that stigma is the reason why, one of the reasons why people take an average of 10 years to seek help when they have a mental health condition. So imagine wow. walking around with a broken leg for 10 years.
Right.
And you talk about enduring pain.
Mm.
They may be suffering.
Yes.
Because of that. And also in the African-American community, the Latino community, communities of color, you know, there's even, seems like even more stigma, mm-hmm. you know, because of the fact that our history, mm-hmm. you know, where we came from. And, you know, because certainly, you know, as the old saying goes, back in the day, you did not show any weakness.
No.
Because weakness, you can be taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. And so people had to put on that brave face despite whatever they were going through. Mm-hmm. And we know though now that, you know, we need to put that aside.
Yes.
And address what's going on.
Yes. Yeah, you know, you're right. Back in the day, thank God those days are gone by, but you know, back in the day, if you were having mental health issues, the last thing you would do, you know, is to seek counseling, or if you're talking to a family member about possibly seeking counseling. You know, on too many occasions, I've heard people in the African American community say, you know, no, we don't do counseling.
Right.
You know, you got a problem, you know, let's go talk to the pastor.
Right.
You know, the pastor's role was expanded to be one that served counseling services beyond the pulpit. And the problem with that was that ministry is their area of expertise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when people are going through things, they need the care and coddling of a real experience and education of a real mental health professional.
Yes.
And there's a distinct difference there. Let me just ask you, so how important do you think mental health education is, and what role do you think it plays in community stabilization?
Well, education, like anything else, is the key. Mm-hmm. You know, being well informed, being able to know the facts is vital. One of the great things that just happened this past July mm-hmm. was the passage of the Mental Health Education Law
yes.
in New York State. Mm-hmm. I'm involved with the Mental Health Association in New York State. I'm on the board. And one thing that we did as an organization was we helped to introduce legislation to the state legislature for this law to be passed. And what it means essentially is that now in New York, all schools, grades K through 12, need to have mental health in the curriculum. And each district is able to fashion that as they see fit, as long as they meet the guidelines set up by state education department. So you talk about education in the community, what better place than to start with our children?
Right.
Because they are the future. And if we start with them, before you know it, it'll be the norm as opposed to something that is not. So, you know, that's one level where education is important. Another level where education is important is where we just try to do things. We try to provide outreach in whatever way we can to reach people so that it isn't something to be afraid of, and this is something to be ashamed of. You know, I teach a program called Mental Health First Aid. We offer it here through the Community Health Center. And this program is, it's an 8-hour certification program. It's like CPR for mental health. It's sponsored by the National Council on Behavioral Health. It's an evidence-based program. All those bells and whistles that go with these great programs. But the thing that's great about it is that it teaches people, the layperson, about mental health, the other risk factors, signs and symptoms, how to intervene in the case of a crisis. So this education is proven to be effective. It's proven to work. And the more people that are educated, the better it's going to be. Well over a million people have been trained in mental health first aid in the United States since 2008. So, and it's growing, even more and more people all the time. So we want to be able to provide that education. And this is a national thing. If someone's listening to this, you know, other parts of the state or the country, rather, it's offered all over. Actually, it's even offered internationally. I think it's like 28 countries. Wow. So the idea is that we want to be able to educate people so they know, you know, what to do or how to respond, and also how to be sensitive and empathetic. You know, one big thing about mental health is that we need to have empathy for people. Because, you know, it's so common for people to turn a blind eye or just diss someone because of what they're going through. Mm-hmm. And if you could put yourself in that person's shoes and try to imagine what it's like to be dealing with what they are going through, then maybe you might be a little more kind to them.
You know, one of the most devastating drugs to ever hit African-American and communities of color was crack cocaine.
Yep, yep.
And that drug, even after rehab, has rendered so many individuals mentally damaged by it.
Right.
Between that and crystal meth, which killed, you know, there are a lot of people out there that while they're staying clean, if you will, they are still experiencing the collateral damage of the stigma of having been a severe abuser, as well as having some mental health issues. How do you think we can reach those individuals?
That's a good question. You know, what happens is, and it's been my experience, that if you talk to most people who are dealing or who have dealt with addiction, at one point in their life, especially during that active addiction, they've dealt with a co-occurring mental health disorder. Mm-hmm. Not uncommon. So how do we reach people that way? Well, first of all, like you said, you use that term stigma. Once again, we need to break down those barriers.
Right.
You know, we need to be able to have the services and the resources to help people. You know, one of the issues we have here is that, you know, mental health is low in the totem pole when you talk about funding, you know, whether it be state, local, federal, you name it. You know, mental health is the last that oftentimes people look at, whereas it's actually one of the most important. So we need to be able to speak out and speak up to those who hold the purse strings.
Insurance companies,
and also legislators who have policy to influence the insurance companies. Mm-hmm. Parity. You know, looking at mental health and physical health on the same level, you know, whether it be through treatment, but also through insurance. So we need to be able to speak up. Now, let me just say something about speaking up. Advocacy works.
Yes.
And
yes,
I'll speak on a few levels. So I talked about the mental health education law. There was also the New York State tax checkoff law. Did you know that you can, on your taxes, you can designate a contribution to go towards mental health awareness, like you can for breast cancer or for wildlife. You can do that for mental health too. There's also a New York State license plate for mental health awareness that you pay a little bit extra money and you get a special license plate. I got one of the first in the state, I'm proud to say. And you put a little money into it, and that money goes towards mental health awareness programming. The point I want to make is that these three programs were legislated through advocacy. Yes. People speaking up, people demanding that these changes be made. Also, locally in the Buffalo area, the West New York Children's Psychiatric Center in West Seneca was kept open by the voices of the community. You know, the governor was ready to shut it down and move the young people to the Buffalo Psychiatric Center, which I knew from the get-go was a wrong move. In fact, I had a chance to testify on that. And so, but the people spoke. And finally, the governor backed down, and the facility is remaining open in West Seneca to serve the children and the youth that need it. But people have to speak up. Like anything else, if people get together as one in unity, then they can make a voice. They can make the voices heard, and they can make a difference. So we need to do the same thing with mental health to help people know that there are resources available that can help them.
Well, legislators have to sometimes understand that budget cuts don't save assets all the time. Sometimes, and most times, they create liabilities.
Right.
And by not making this more of a priority, especially with the insurance companies. I mean, if you've got cancer, they don't cut you off at 19 chemo treatments.
Right.
They cut you off when you're well. You cut them off. I'm well. The same thing should be the guidepost for mental health. You don't take somebody who's in the middle of a huge recovery process and they're three quarters of the way full and then say, well, we can't pay for any more visits.
Right.
That doesn't bode well for a person's complete recovery to productivity. So you're absolutely right. It's going to take advocacy to increase awareness about that specific thing, especially with insurance companies and those legislators who are in charge of the purse strings.
Let me say one other quick thing too. Now, mm-hmm. remember, we're talking a lot about treatment.
Yes.
There's also prevention. And
yes.
that's why I go back to that mental health education law for our youth and our children. You know, if a person is able to understand that they're going through something or that a loved one or a friend is, you treat it at the front end as opposed to the back end.
Well, what do the symptoms look like?
Oh my gosh. Well, it depends on what disorder you're talking about. But a lot of it, so generally speaking, someone that might be dealing something might seem sad, or they might seem like they have no fatigue, or they might be acting unusually. They may be saying things that don't make sense. They may be withdrawing. Withdrawal is a big one for most of the issues that are out there, mental health issues, because there's a feeling that the person may not want to socialize. Change in hygiene, weight gain or weight loss. The person may appear to be fatigued, you know, losing sleep or sleeping too much. You know, those are the markers of what to look for. You know, there's a really a lot of great resources online to find out information. One, which I really like, that I point people to, is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, NAMI.org. And on that website, you can get just general information about, like what you're talking about, what the risk factors are, what the signs are, and how to get help. And there's others like Mental Health America. MentalHealthAmerica.net is another really good resource to learn about mental health. And also on the Mental Health America website, there is a free anonymous mental health screen that you can take to determine that if there may be some risk factors or some things going on that you need to get addressed, you know, as a first step.
Mm-hmm. That's good information. Because a lot of times, you know, we're on the inside looking out.
Right.
And we don't realize what we're going through. And people are hesitant to point certain things out to you. So that's a very good resource. So, you know, lastly, I just want to ask you, what's in store for the future? What's in store for next year for Carl Shallowhorn and mental health education and the Community Health Center?
A lot. Let me say a lot. Because, you know, I was fortunate enough to have joined the organization this past June. And it's been a whirlwind of activity since then. I've been, you know, it's been amazing how fast time is flying by. So I mentioned our mental health first aid grants. So we're going to be delivering mental health first aid training in the West New York area. We'll be hosting some right here at the Community Health Center for the general public. We'll also be linking with community-based organizations to deliver the training specifically for them. We're also going to be holding a series of mental health forums every month from January to May. And these forums are going to focus on different topics. It's going to be the third Wednesday of every month, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. We're going to be looking at the first one, general mental health. The next one is going to be on, homicide and grief, which, of course, as you know, causes any number of different mental health concerns for individuals. Then we're going into youth in March. And then in April, we're looking at family caregivers. And then in the last one in May is going to be first responders.
Wow.
So we're looking at a lot of great topics to talk about, you know, and it's going to be panel discussions. I'm going to be facilitating the panels. And then also we have a program called Safe Home.
Yes.
Which is a spinoff of, you know, it's not a mental health program per se, but it does have a mental health component. And so Safe Home is a program for returning citizens who have been incarcerated. And what we'll be doing is we'll be utilizing restorative justice principles to help individuals heal with those they've offended. But in addition to that, the great thing is that they'll be linked here with the community health center where they can get their medical needs met. They can get all those other mental health needs met that they bring with them as they return to their communities. And that is a public health crisis as we know it. And then in addition to that, for me personally, I continue to blog and write for BP Magazine and for my United Church of Christ Mental Health Network. I'm also in the process of writing another book that hopefully I'll be working on. I don't have an exact publication date. I'm in the early stages of that. But that's another thing I'll be working on in 2019. And really just continue to spread the word in whatever way I can. I mean, we have some great opportunities. The podcast, obviously, is launching. So we'll be doing that on a regular basis so people will be able to check out that as well. So just looking forward to a lot of great things. Just continue this work. And there's always more to be done. You know, this is the kind of thing that I look, you know, I see myself working for my lifetime. You know,
wow.
I don't know about, I mean, they talk about retiring. I don't know if I'll ever fully retire because this isn't the kind of stuff you retire from.
No, it isn't.
No, it's a life's work and I really enjoy it.
Well, listen, I just want to personally thank you in wrapping up for being such a gracious guest as you are usually a gracious host. And to just, you know, tell you that the Community Health Center has a new jewel in its treasure chest of professionals, and that new jewel is you.
Oh,
so thank you so much for gracing us with your story today, and we're just looking forward to great things from Carl Schallhorn in the future.
So this is Carl Schallhorn and Carla Thomas for Color Me Healthy. You can follow us on Facebook and also on our website, which is chcb.net, and we look forward to see you next time. Be well.
Be well. Thank you.